Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Reliant Community Ask an Educator live chat. We are so glad you are here with us today. We're so fortunate to be joined by educator extraordinaire, Melinda Marinuk, who has guided our company along the way, making sure that we're giving science-based, fantastic information for people with diabetes. Before I introduce Melinda, I just want to do a couple of quick housekeeping notes. We are recording this program so that we can share it with a lot of folks who texted us who said they wanted to attend, but they weren't able to be here live. So you'll notice that we are recording this. However, if you do not say anything in this chat, you will not be recorded. So this will maintain your privacy. And we have set the settings so that you can't unmute. If you have a question you'd like to ask, we would love to hear it. Just put it in the chat, and I will be keeping an eye on that. And we'll be able to, I hope, get to a ton of questions. We had a lot of folks text us questions yesterday when they said they weren't going to be able to be here. So we have quite a long list from Melinda, and we will get to them as get to as many of them as possible. We will be doing this again in the fall, so we'll be able to save anything we don't get to then. One very important thing I want to emphasize here is that this chat, the information that Melinda is going to be sharing, is general information about general questions. So if you have a specific question about medication that you're on or other conditions you might be experiencing, those aren't questions we are going to be able to answer here. Those are things you want to talk to your healthcare provider about. And the reason for that is they know your whole health situation. They're able to look at your chart. They have a sense of kind of where you've been coming from, and we don't have that. So if I see something in the chat along those lines, I'll try to respond accordingly. But just know, that's our policy because we want to make sure you get a fully informed answer, and that's really going to be delivered by your healthcare provider. So, Melinda Marinuk has been a diabetes educator for 45 years. She spent many of those years with the Joslin Diabetes Center, which is a world-renowned diabetes center that does research, sees patients, just does incredible work. And so we're very fortunate to get to have her here with us today. And Melinda, welcome. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks so much, Ansley. I didn't realize there was a corporate uniform and we're wearing the same thing. So.
Yes, everyone. Mauve is the color today. So,
Good to see you.
Melinda, I'm just going to jump right in. We have so many questions, and I want to try to get to as many of them as we can. The
Sure.
first one is one we hear so often, and that is, why is there so much conflicting advice about what people with type 2 diabetes should eat?
I'm so glad that this is the first question that you're bringing up because I really want to make the point that there is no such thing as a diabetic diet. And part of the reason for the conflicting advice, or what feels conflicting, is that you hear a message that, high carb is good, low carb is good, vegetarian is good, Mediterranean is good. And so that feels like conflicting advice. Whereas really, most all these approaches can be good in the right in certain situations and for individuals. So the message of no such thing as one way to eat with diabetes, there are many ways that can work for an individual. Everybody's different. Science is always evolving. So some things that we used to say have changed a little bit. When I was first trained, the message was, have more healthy fats and oils, like a lot of them. Now we know a little bit less is better for you. We also know that every person is on a different medication plan, and different medication plans need different kinds of recommendations for how to eat. So, bottom line, it feels like conflicting or confusing advice, but that's in part because everyone ideally gets slightly tailored and different recommendations.
But I feel like this is going to be a theme of our conversation. As we're trying to figure out what the right diet eating style is for us, we really want to be talking to our doctor, our diabetes educator, et cetera, right?
Yeah,
So,
and often an answer I often can give is it depends because it
exactly.
depends on what your situation is.
But that's really good news, right? If I absolutely hate like a certain group of vegetables or whatever, it's still possible to eat a healthy diet with diabetes, whatever my personal preferences are. So someone else asked, why do doctors often follow the American Diabetes Association's guidelines? What's the reason behind these recommendations? I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what those are, because I don't know if folks are aware of what those are. And then you explain kind of like how do people come up with them?
Sure. So I actually pulled this. It's considered kind of like the Bible, if you will. It comes out every year, the standards of care, and they're not that you want to read 367 pages of documented evidence behind why the ADA says what they say, but there's a whole big chapter just on nutrition and diabetes education. And every year, and they've done this for 50, 60, 70 years, the experts come together, about 20 of them, in all areas of diabetes medicine and science, including experts in nutrition. They review if there's been any changes in the literature, in the research, in the science that reflect any possible changes in the existing recommendations that need to be made. And then it gets published every year and disseminated as widely as possible. There is no charge, there is no fee for doctors to get these recommendations. This is not something that, the ADA makes money off of selling it. They're very scientific based. And I will also say that so those are updated every year. And then subsets of recommendations, so the nutrition recommendations per se, are updated every 5 years. And they go into a lot more depth than what the overall standards of care are. And I will say that the updates of the nutrition recommendations are going to be released within the next 10 or so months. They're almost ready. So we don't anticipate big changes in those, but I feel really proud that these recommendations are science-based, are evidence-based, are reviewed not only by the professional practice committee that puts them together, but then by a bigger group of experts that looks on it afterwards. So, to your earlier question, why is there so much conflicting information? This helps mitigate and minimize that as well.
And also, I think it's important. I think you've been a part of the committees that develop those guidelines.
I have, yes, for a
And
number of years,
I think what's really great about that is like this is kind of the consensus of like the best minds in the field. Okay, this is what the data suggests to us. And so it really allows uniformity and great
And
minds.
Anthony, some examples of some of the changes we've seen over the last 10 years, as for example, more evidence has come out about the benefit of lower and even low carbohydrate diets. That's in there. The benefit of vegan and vegetarian diets, that's in there. The benefit of Mediterranean diets, that's in there. They're very much on the position of a whole variety of meal planning approaches can work. They also present the cautions for what you need to be aware of. If, for example, you're having a very low carbohydrate diet and are on a certain medication called an SGLT2 inhibitor, that could increase some risks. So it gives the physicians enough information to help them be aware of the benefits and risks of a variety of different nutrition approaches. There are 22 specific nutrition-related recommendations that are in there, so it's quick and easy for physicians to access too.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, next question. Why is it hard to find simple, clear information about how to reverse type 2 diabetes instead of just manage it? The question, can we reverse or cure type 2 diabetes?
So that's a complicated question because there's a lot of parts to it. So without giving you a lecture for an hour, let me try to hit a couple high points. So we really try to not use the word reversed, first of all, but we are acknowledging that in some instances, and more as we're moving forward, we can put diabetes into what we call remission. So remission for diabetes is defined as keeping your A1C below 5.7 without any medications. So, if you're able to do that with healthy eating and with weight loss, usually that weight loss has to be pretty significant. And it means, being on a lower calorie diet for often it's a fairly intensive diet to keep that weight off. There, people can go in remission. Now, I want to point out that it's possible but not easy. And so there was a big national study that was done, boy, a number of years ago that they still look at the data called Look Ahead. And they looked at people with type 2 diabetes and asked that specific question, can we put diabetes in remission? And with all the support and the educators and the dietitians that they gave to these 5,000 adults that were in the study around the country, only about 11% achieved actual remission in the first year. And 4 years later, only 7% were still in remission. So, yes, possible. But even with lots of support, difficult. We see better results, more people in remission who've had metabolic surgery, bariatric surgery, because it's a big decision. But for people that do carry a lot of excess weight, that truly is linked with diabetes remission. And we are seeing a little bit more success with some of the new GLP-1 medications that are giving people who've struggled with weight loss a little bit more support and a medication that really does seem to be helpful in keeping weight off for the long term. So hopefully we're going to see those numbers go up in terms of the people that are successful in diabetes remission. But and I also, the last point I want to make is it's easier to achieve remission, although never easy, easier, if you are doing it earlier in the diagnosis. If you've been living with diabetes for 10 or more years, it's harder to achieve remission.
I think the reversal word comes from a lot of supplements and herbs that are kind of promising diabetes reversal. And we did have several questions about bitter melon or other supplements. Can you talk a little bit about like what the science shows about supplements versus medications?
Yeah, boy, it sure would be great if we could just take something that would reverse diabetes. But despite the fact that there have been quite a few studies on lots of these supplements, and as well as natural foods like bitter melon and cinnamon, for example, but really there is not clinical evidence that supports it. Yes, for a few individuals, they may see their blood sugar go down a little bit, but not enough. And the ADA has been looking at this and commenting on this for years, and saying that there is really no benefit for supplements specific to reducing blood sugar or having diabetes go in remission. Absolutely necessary for people who need more calcium, who don't get enough in their diet, or who are vegetarian or vegan and need some extra B12 or zinc or some other nutrients, but not for diabetes per se.
So we had a medicine-specific question, which was, is there a certain dose of insulin I should be taking to bring my blood glucose down based on how high it is? Now, again, general information-wise, what would you say to that person?
Yeah. So, first of all, recognize that there are several major categories of insulin, and many people with type 2 diabetes, which is a big part of your audience, Ansley, take a long-acting insulin. So, one injection a day that gives kind of even coverage all day long. The question that you're asking really applies only to people who take what we refer to as mealtime or bolus insulin, an injection before each meal. That's the kind of insulin that can be adjusted based on what you're planning to eat. Or if your insulin is, excuse me, if your blood sugar is too high, giving a little bit more, 1 or 2 units. There is a formula that can be determined based on the total amount of insulin that you take and for how much you want to bring that blood sugar down. Are you trying to bring it down 20 points, 50 points, 200 points? It varies for each individual, so I'm not going to give you the formula, but it is a really important discussion to have with your doctor if you are taking mealtime or bolus insulin, how to make those adjustments.
So just as our new folks join, if you guys have questions, please put them in the chat. We will get to as many of them as we can. We have a lot of questions we received yesterday. So we're trying to make our way through those. And anything we don't get to today, we will include in our next conversation with Melinda. So yeah, just put those questions in the chat. We will get us to as many of them as possible. Melinda, I wanted to ask you, people might be confused about what type of insulin they're on. Do you recommend that people talk with their doctor to really understand what medications they are on so that they can understand how best to proceed?
Absolutely. I mean, really understanding and keeping a list of all your medicines, and knowing exactly how they work, what their possible side effects, and when we're talking about insulin, when it peaks, when you are, if it peaks, if you're more likely to have a low blood sugar reaction from it. So having a list of your medicines, knowing the type of insulin that you're on, and how it works is really critical.
So one person asked, is it helpful to track how many carbs, fats, and proteins I eat to manage my blood sugar? And then second part of the question, how do I calculate how many carbs, fats, proteins I need at each meal?
So interesting, Ainsley. This is something that I would say dietitians and the medical world and the endocrinology diabetes world has changed their view over time. 20 years ago, if you came to see me, I would have been calculating for you exactly how many calories, how many grams of carbohydrate, protein, fat that you need. And we were pretty rigid about getting people to try to eat close to that number. Now we find, general guidelines are really fine, and we've spent a little bit too much time in the past obsessing about those specific numbers. So the big answer is no, not really. But every situation is different. It may depend on you. I think if you're going to track one thing, it would be tracking carbohydrates and keeping them in a particular range. So for most people, about 40 to 45% of their calories from carbohydrate. But again, that takes some calculations to talk about with your dietitian, your diabetes educator, your doctor, what that means. On a per meal basis, it could be between 15 and 30 grams of carb at breakfast, between 30 and 45 at lunch, between 45 and 60 at supper. But those are just general guidelines and should be individualized to you.
So I think this is probably a good moment to talk a little bit about the fact that it's carbohydrates in general that raise blood sugar, and how we can adjust the way we eat carbohydrates to minimize those blood sugar spikes. Do you have a couple of tips for us in terms of like why carbohydrates are what lift blood sugar and how we can enjoy them without seeing big spikes?
And some people really have thought about carbohydrates as a dirty word, and we just, they're so bad for you. And first of all, recognize that carbohydrates are the fuel that make our bodies go. It's the fuel that make our brains go. We have to have carbohydrates for our health. Now, there's a big difference between healthy carbs like vegetables and fruits and whole grains and legumes. And less healthy carbs when we're talking about our sugar sweetened beverages and juices and refined white carbohydrates, white bread, and all your white flour things. So, focusing on the healthier, higher fiber carbohydrates is really important. And it was so important for me to make that point that I forgot what your question was.
So recognizing how important they are, how can we enjoy things like fruit, for example, without causing a big blood sugar spike?
So the best thing to do is make sure you're eating your carbohydrates with some other foods that have protein and fat in it. So if you're having an apple and you find that it might spike you, doesn't spike for everybody, have it with a little bit of peanut butter, or have it with a little couple of almonds, or have it sliced up in a salad. So mixing things, so just straight carbohydrate, which will spike your blood sugar for most people a little bit more, making it as part of a meal or in combination with some foods that contain protein and fat.
Wonderful. And again, for our new folks who have joined us, if you have questions for Melinda, please go ahead and put them in the chat. We will get to as many of them as we can. We got a ton of questions yesterday from folks who were texting saying they couldn't join, but they had burning questions. So feel free. And again, we will get to them to as many as possible. So one person asked something that you were just alluding to. She says, in general, I read that fruit is high in carb and will raise blood sugar. It doesn't seem to raise mine. I can eat apples and strawberries with no problem. Why is that? And so let's answer that question, but I'd like for you to talk a little bit about how we figure out everyone is different. What is going to raise my blood sugar more than perhaps someone else.
Well, the best way to understand how food is affecting your blood sugar is by looking at your numbers. Ideally, everybody is checking blood sugar, whether you have a meter or whether you're wearing a continuous glucose monitor. It's easier than ever to really try to understand how different foods affect your blood sugar. You can't just go by how you feel, because over time, people feel less as their blood sugar goes higher. So actually checking is really important. And you can do something that we refer to as checking in pairs. So before a meal or a particular food, an apple, you can check and see what your blood sugar is. You eat the item, and then 2 hours later, approximately 1 to 2 hours later, you check it again and you see what kind of spike there is. Generally, fruit or pure carbohydrate is going to raise blood sugar for most people, but it has been fascinating over the last 10 years. There's been a number of research articles showing that there may be some link with the variety of people's gut microbiome, the little bacteria and the bugs that are in your gut, that may make you, Ansley, eat an apple and have a fairly flat response, whereas I would have a higher response. So this is a very small percentage of people that are experiencing some of these unusual differences. Most people will spike up. And I just want to emphasize the importance of checking the blood sugar to see how these foods affect you.
One of the folks in our community calls it being a diabetes scientist, that we really, for some people, oatmeal causes a big spike. For other people, it might be corn or it might be toast. So really doing that checking in pairs to get a baseline for your body is really important.
And also keeping in mind what you're eating it with, because if you're having oatmeal sort of by itself, some people like it with just plain, versus oatmeal with milk, oatmeal with almonds and berries and different things mixed in, peanut butter mixed in, is going to have a different glucose response. So, and what you'd eaten before that, what your stress level is, what all these other factors that affect blood sugar. We sometimes think that it's just what the food we're eating that affects blood sugar, but there's so many factors that affect your day-to-day dips and fall, rises and falls of your blood sugar.
And actually, just to do a little PSA here, I know that being sick can have a big impact on blood sugar. So, what's the recommendation when someone is not feeling well? Should we be checking more often?
Absolutely, checking more often, because that's where the blood sugar could start creeping up and you're really not feeling any difference because you're feeling sick. And also, just emotional stress can be raising your blood sugar. So during those different times of what we refer to as stress, it is a really good time to check more often.
So someone else asked, hang on just one second, I just lost it. This person asked, why is my blood sugar high first thing in the morning, even before I eat? And this is kind of what you were talking about before, that there's lots of different things that impact blood sugar, not just food. So why do people tend to notice high numbers in the morning before we haven't eaten anything all night?
It's not a common occurrence, but it's not unusual either. And what can be happening in people is, as they're in the middle of the night, as they're sleeping at 3, 4 in the morning, your body is sort of getting you ready to wake up, and there's this natural release of hormones, the counter-regulatory hormones that sort of say, we're getting ready, we're going to get your body ready to wake up and face the day. And those hormones actually give a natural spike to the blood sugar. And so you are waking up with blood sugar that's high from a response to your morning wake-up hormones, I'll call them early in the morning wake-up hormones. It could also be due to the fact that you maybe didn't have enough insulin or medication the night before. It could be due to some snacking or overeating the night before, but it's more likely to do with this early morning dawn phenomenon, as it's referred to sometimes.
And I'll just say to anyone, if you are experiencing this and you'd like some more information, just text me and say, hey, I'd like more information about high numbers in the morning. And I will send an article to you about things you can do to figure out what's happening and some strategies to try to bring those numbers down. So just text me and I will get that off to you.
Great.
Melinda, next question, and this is one we hear a lot. If my blood sugar is already high when I check before I eat, should I still eat the same amount of carbs at that meal?
So, in general, this is a good thing to be talking with your dietitian about, just to see how often this is happening, if it's a one-time occurrence. In general, if you are being your own diabetes scientist and researching things, yes, eat a little less carb. Eat a little, look at the carbohydrate that you are eating and eat a little less of what might be more refined, or if there was more sugar sweetened something in there to reduce that. We know that less carbohydrate is going to spike the sugars less. I just don't want people to think like I'm going to cut out the carbohydrate. And if you are taking a mealtime insulin, and this is really important, you don't want to change that amount of carbohydrate that you're eating unless you change the amount of insulin. Because if you're taking the same amount of insulin before the meal and eating a lot less carbohydrate, you could crash and go low and have hypoglycemia.
So definitely something we want to talk to our doctor slash diabetes educator about. And I think we talked about this a little bit on the last Ask an Educator, but we do want to let our doctor know if we are seeing consistently high blood sugars, at certain times of day, that is information that is valuable to your healthcare professional. So we want to make sure we're bringing that in, right?
Never make a change for if your blood sugar's high, just kind of like one day and then on another day, you look for a pattern. Look for 3 days in a row of it being high at a certain time and see if there's any link that you can make. Is it re related to something that you ate? Is it related to maybe taking your medicine at a different time? You try to look for a pattern and what might have caused it. And then absolutely, you've got data to bring to your physician or provider. To talk about what changes might you might need to make.
Okay, next question. I'm so excited to get to talk about this. This person asked, does aspartame and diet soda increase blood sugar? And in addition to answering that question, I'd love for you to talk about artificial sweeteners in general. Like, are they safe? Should we be spending more to buy the natural option? What's your thoughts on artificial sweeteners?
This is a topic that has been a hot topic for 30 plus years, ever since we've started using saccharin, one of the very first sweeteners. And I really do feel confident that the researchers really try to stay on top of it to give people with diabetes, as well as people that are managing weight, the best available information. And in moderation, small amounts of artificial or non-nutritive sweeteners really is fine. We were being aware of a study that came out fairly recently showing that very high intakes of sodas with artificial sweeteners may increase the risk of getting diabetes. Okay, maybe. The American Diabetes Association is very clear in their recommendations. I keep holding up this book that moderate amounts of non-nutritive sweeteners are fine. However, water is preferred when it comes to drinking a beverage, instead of if you're that person that drinks 6 cans of diet soda a day. Let's talk about something in more moderation, recognizing that some artificial or non-nutritive sweeteners, like the sugar alcohols, the words that end in OL, sorbitol, mannitol, xylitol, more of those in foods are going to have you feel some stomach discomfort, some more gassiness, some bloating. So some of them do have those kind of side effects, but in general, feel comfortable that small amounts are fine.
So I'm recognizing we have 60 seconds, and I know you wanted to give folks some resources about that they could use to for meal planning, et cetera. So I'm going to
Sure.
turn it over to you.
Sure. I just wanted to make sure the audience was aware of some great resources from the American Diabetes Association. Diabetesfoodhub.org gives all kinds of recipes, shopping lists, free cooking classes, videos. So if you're looking for recipes related to anything, snacks, gluten-free, you can put in all kinds of parameters for that. I also want to make sure you know how to find a diabetes care and education specialist. You can go and look for, I think Anthony's going to share a link for a certified how to find someone that can help you with that, or a registered dietitian. Find out, talk with your provider, your doctor, what resources are in your community to help you? You don't have to do this alone. And thank goodness for resources like Ansley and what this community does.
So I just put a link to find a diabetes educator in the chat for the conversation. And folks who are listening to the replay, just text me if you want us to send that link to you. Diabetes care and education specialists like Melinda are such a great resource for people with diabetes, and they're such a great place to get specific questions about food and carbs and all of that stuff for you answered. So Melinda, thank you so much for joining us. This is, as always, you're an inspiring source of knowledge.
You're so welcome. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And thank you, everyone who joined us. Gosh, it's wonderful to see you here. And thanks to everyone who's joining us on the replay. We're so appreciative that you're part of Reliant Community. And I just want to tell you guys, I love getting messages back from you. So if you ever want to text me, just say good morning or anything like that. I would love to hear from you all. So have a fantastic rest of day, and we'll see you next time.